Think we can start. Thanks to everybody. Thank you for being here, for joining us this afternoon and taking your time to participate our talk. It's going to be a very important talk, a very significant topic we will discuss about, and it's great that you all could find your time to come here and join us. My name is Maria Cristina Pavarini. I work for the website The Spinoff, formerly Sportswear International, a specialized magazine and website that is focused on denim, jeanswear, sportswear, and also most recently on sustainability, innovation, and many other topics. I'm here to speak with some experts and some insiders of our industry. We want to discuss a topic which is very important for the present and especially for the future of the industry, of us all, and especially for the future of the planet. As we all know, there is a set of laws that is going to be effective very soon and will influence and will also oblige all the companies to get complied with it, to respect them. And we want to put some light, we want to throw some light on this aspect because there are some unclear points in terms of timing, in terms of laws, in terms of commitment that is requested to each company at all levels of the value chain and also to brands. So we will discuss with some specialists of our market. We have here, I would like to speak with Christina Zeidler-Linders, External Stakeholder Engagement Senior Manager and at CNA. We have Ivo Merskiowski, Managing Director Germany, Qantis International. And we have Mauro Scalia, Director Sustainable Business at Eurotex. Very briefly, I would like to introduce some of the topics which are related to this change. To show that we are speaking about an important, really crucial aspect, and also some figures are very important because they relate to the behavior of us all in terms of as consumers, but also related to the industry. According to studies of the European Union, between 2000 and 2015, the global textile production has almost doubled. There are studies that foresee that by 2030, the consumption of clothing and footwear is expected to increase by 63% from the present about 60 million tons per year to 100 and more million tons by 2030. Also, in terms of discarded textiles, in the European Union, these studies speak of 6 million tons of textiles which are thrown away approximately every year, and about 11 kilos per person are thrown away every year. Along with it, every second, somewhere in the world, there is a truck full of textiles that is landfilled or incinerated. So we speak about very important figures. As clothing represents an important share of the European textile consumption, which is 81%, we also know that garments are worn for very short period, very few times, and this means that we are facing a very widespread habits of overproduction and overconsumption, a trend which needs to be changed. Although the price of apparel has lowered significantly in the last years by about 30% because also of inflation, despite this, the consumption of goods, of textiles and and fashion has increased enormously, as I said before. We are now facing a linear business of model. I mean that we are using now a model that includes very low rates of use, of reuse, of repair, and fiber-to-fiber recycling. And also, when it comes to designing apparel, not so much importance is given to quality, to durability, and to recyclability. They are not priorities. Also the shredding of microplastics coming from the synthetic textiles and from footwear are also causing a significant and important damage to our oceans and to the environment entirely. And also, so this is a big picture, I would say, about the situation in terms of business model and waste management of the textiles. The European Union also recognizes that the market, the industry, the textile and clothing sector is very important in terms of economy, because it counts for 160,000 companies. It employs 1.5 million people, and it generates a yearly turnover of 162 billions. That is a figure that refers to 2019, before COVID. This means that after that there has been a significant lowering, because in terms of textile, the turnover has lowered after the COVID-19 by more than 9% in terms of textiles, and more than 18% in terms of clothing. So we know it's also another key aspect. How can this situation change? What can we expect from the application of the new laws? Thanks to the green transition, there is the possibility to change, to invert this model and start changing from a linear business model to a more circular type of model. And we are going to discuss about this, and we'll hear from our experts what they think about it, even if there are some. I would like to add the last few figures about estimates that, according to McKinsey, they say that only by textile waste recycling, we could expect that investments are required for this change could be around between 6 billion and 7 billion by 2030, they will be required in these terms. And the result of this investment, once the whole thing will happen at scale, could be around an increase in profitability by 1.5 billion euros to more than 2 billion profit by 2030. It could bring about 15,000 new jobs, and it could bring a lowering of CO2 emission by around 4 million tons. So I think it's important that we discuss more about the situation. Of course, the topic is huge, the topic is vast, and there are so many facets in it, and I'm sure that we could stay here for hours, but the time is not much. So, and also you will need to visit the fair, so we will focus mostly on product, on production, and on communication, which are some key aspects, and also which relate significantly to the action, the business you work with. And we will like to hear the opinion of our speakers with down-to-earth examples, with suggestions, and also asking them to give us a picture of the state of the art of the industry at the moment. So let's get into the talk in the real. I want you to hear your opinion. And I would like, first of all, to ask each of you to introduce yourself briefly and explain who you are and what your company does. So, Christina Seidler-Linders, please let us know about you.
Yeah, hello, my name is Christina Seidler-Linders, as you heard. I'm responsible for external stakeholder engagement in the Global Sustainability Department of CNA. And just a few words to CNA. I think most of you might know CNA. It's a European fashion retailer. We do fashion for women, men, and kids. And we are, our business is mainly focusing on Europe, and we have subsidiaries in Mexico and Brazil. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Ivo Merziowski.
Thank you. So my name is Ivo Merziowski. I'm the managing director of Quantis. Quantis is an environmental sustainability specialty consultancy. So we are in the business of measuring sustainability and bridging from science to business. Among the work we do, we work with the T-Rex project, which is about closing the loop on textiles, so building towards a circular model for textiles. And there we are a research partner.
Thank you. Now we hear Mauro Scalia.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm responsible for sustainability in textile in Eurotex, which is the official European Industry Association for Textile Clothing. So we are based in Brussels, and our job is to advise policymakers, Commission, Parliament, when it comes to the impact of legislation in the industry. And of course, we represent the whole European industry, those 154,000 companies that you mentioned, we represent officially in the policymaking debate.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. I know that would be best to start from ladies, but in this case, I would like to ask an opinion to our expert here about this complex of laws. Where do we stand with the laws? When will they be approved? And a bit, what do you see? What is the situation? If you want to start speaking about...
Sure. Mauro. Thank you. I can give it a start. So... Yeah, we start with the pictures immediately. What you see behind me, it's a visual representation of 16 new or renewed pieces of legislation that focus either primarily or have a very strong impact on textile. And I mean any kind of textile, whether it's technical textile or denim that we have around here. And to give you an idea, when I started my position in Eurotex 7 years ago in sustainability, there were 2 pieces of legislation. Now we have this, which is very much overwhelming. We have many contacts with companies or for our members, the National Association, asking us what's happening. Because they all impact different parts of the value chain. And perhaps I can give a few reference to some of the legislation ongoing, which we see as the most important to change how the global textile value chain is operating. And of course, environmental impact, it's a major driver for that. So I only mention a few of those. I'm not going to monopolize the microphone, talk about all of that. But let me talk about the eco-design requirements to begin with. So already for 1 year, we are discussing a new law which will set minimum legal criteria for a product to be placed in the market. Any kind of product, whether it's a car, a furniture, a textile, or a phone. And that will have a specific focus on textiles, which we expect to be the first of the sector which will be regulated. To give you an example, if now you buy a shirt like the one I'm wearing and the color goes away after the first washing, legally this is possible because you don't have minimal durability requirements for garments. This is going to change. So there will be new requirements for the performance of the product. As Eurotex, we specifically advocate to focus these requirements on durability, reusability, so the capacity of a garment to be reused again, which means very much quality, basically, and also recycled content linked to other pieces of legislation. But we welcome the idea of having step-by-step recycled contents in garments. There will also be information requirements. That means if you place a product in the market, not only you need to ensure a minimum level of quality, or durability or recycled contents, but also information that will be given through consumer from something called Digital Product Passport, DPP in the acronym. That means you take your phone, you scan a QR code, maybe in the label or maybe attached to the product, and then you can see a number of information about the product, which we do not yet know what information will be there, but we have indication this could include what materials are there, where these materials were made, where the 4 main processes of the production were made. Are there recycled contents? Are there specific sustainability label? And many others. This legislation only is going to be a groundbreaking changing rule because it will have impact on the European one, but on any part of the world supply chain which sell products in Europe, online included. So it's really groundbreaking. This has now been discussed. There is a lot of consultation where associations like mine and other stakeholders provide technical inputs. And then you have the parliament, the member states, so the countries like Germany, France, Italy, and everyone else discussing the details. And we expect already some compromises by starting the negotiation on the compromise after the summertime. In principle, it should be finished by the next year, because that's when the current government of the EU is finishing its mandate. So we would expect to have this legislation already in 1 year from now. Very briefly, not to enter the details, we also have two important pieces of legislation. One, it's about green claim. So it will oblige brands that says my product is green or is greener than my products, the competitor's products, to justify these claims with a robust assessment, a life cycle assessment. So you will not be able to cherry pick what is good for you and neglect what is not good for you, but you need to have the same methodology in Europe to justify your claims and also your target of your brand. You can't say I'm gonna be sustainable in the next 10 years. No, you need to justify, you need to demonstrate that. And the last piece, but of course we can enter in details, it's about the mandatory collection of discarded textiles, which is gonna be introduced in Europe in about 1 year and a half from now. So just like now you separate collector glass, papers, and metals, the same is gonna happen for textiles. And that's also huge because most of the European countries, they are not yet equipped for that. So there will always be also be a tax placed on a product, and some of the cost of the product will be used to create a system to organize this collection, which amount to the 7.5 million tons that you mentioned before. So these are just the 3 of the 16, mm-hmm. but I've already stopped there, because I think it can be overwhelming enough for now.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, Ivo.
Maybe I can pick it up from where you left off. Mauro, thanks for setting the scene. And I think it's daunting to the audience. If I look into the faces, you're faced with a lot of regulation. It's literally around the corner. So as a consultancy, our advice is always to get prepared now, because you will need to have the right competences on board. You may need to hire new people who bring the relevant skills to do all of that. And you need to build your processes towards that. Specifically, the 3 asks I think we see for the industry currently are, on one hand, build the necessary transparency and traceability in your supply chains to have the information at all. Then secondly, build your eco-design practices. And what we mean by that is it's really about how to design products which are more durable, easier to repair, and easier to recycle. And the 3rd element is about communication. So you need to have customer-facing or consumer-facing communication prepared, which you need to back up with solid data and science. And these are the 3 big asks that we see. And you can see how that reflects on the governance in your company and the need to work with your supply chain to really engage with your suppliers, but also facing downstream to anticipate the end of life management of the garments you put on the market, because you need to turn them into a more circular model where before everything would ultimately go to waste, to landfills. So these are the 3 big areas I think we should discuss in this talk.
Thank you. Just one more question. Refer to these actual facts. The laws are going to be very probably approved by end of next year. And when will companies have to be ready to comply with that? How much time do companies have afterwards?
No, like most of the legislation, legislation introduced in Brussels, you always have time for the supply chain to get prepared. That can vary, can be 18 months, can be 36 months, it really depends.
Okay.
But what we know is that the moment these new criteria, for instance, minimum quality criteria, will be set in stone in the legal text, then the whole market will scramble to get ready for that. So even though you might be given, legally speaking, 2 years even to adjust your value chain, especially the big brands, we would expect would start immediately to reorganize or prepare its suppliers to comply with that. So I would say already in 1 year from now, we should know if the future T-shirt should be prepared to be resisting, 100 washing cycles or 30 degrees instead of 50 washing cycles. I'm just making an example to give a hint of the direction. So it's going to happen, let's say, in 1 year from now, we should know what the core contents will be like.
Okay, thank you. Thanks a lot. Okay, and so now let's go and see what is the industry doing, because it's also important to understand what's going on. And so, Christina, what is this set of laws implying in terms of your company? What have been the priorities on that CNA has been focused on already?
So we see all these legislation coming up, but to be honest, the topics here are not new to us. So since many years, we are investing in sustainability. We are part of different programs and initiatives when it comes to improved working conditions, when it comes to better chemical use, circularity, just name a few of them. We are part of different multi-stakeholder initiatives and programs with other brands to move things forward. So we see a bit of a chance in that legislation because it creates a level playing field. So everyone needs to apply to it. Everyone needs to work according to the legislation. And for us, it's also important that everyone selling in the EU needs to apply to this legislation. So therefore, we basically welcome it. So that's our general approach. You asked about our focus. I think our focus is quite broad, but if I should name a few legislations, we are like constantly monitoring. Of course, it's the due diligence legislation. In Germany, we have already the German Supply Chain Act, where companies have to comply. Then we look into the whole ESPR, so the eco-design reporting and extended producer responsibility and connected with waste. So I would say these are a few of the top legislations we're looking at.
Thank you. From your point of view as experts, Euratex and Qantis, I would like to know, what do you know about companies? Where do they stand now? Do you know? Can you make any examples of the situation? For example, if I might say, in Italy, I heard a statistic. There is referred to the overall, because all companies have to rely on this and be focused on this in different levels. In Italy, 75% of the companies answered that they are not ready yet. Mm-hmm. So I would like to know, what about the textile companies or fashion, clothing apparel companies? What do you know about it? Where do they stand at the moment?
This is a difficult question because, technically speaking, we do not yet know the details of these legislations. So it's hard to say, am I prepared or not? To have higher quality in my products. So I think it really depends by what is the business model of a company and where does it stand in the value chain. If we stick with the example of durability, my company specializes in high quality durable products, then in some of your customers. Not legally mandatory, but would be pretty much asked by many who want to make voluntary claims on sustainability. So there will be requirements to make it possible for companies to receive data on the chemicals, on the materials, and pass it on to their clients. And in that would be complex because the whole textile value chain is very big. It's scattered across continent. The data format, it's not the same. Imagine you have a system where a Nokia phone can only speak with Nokia mobile phone. It's pretty much what happens today in the value chain. We don't have interoperability. When if I have a Nokia phone, I can speak to any mobile phone or landline, just pick up Nokia as an example, of course. So the cost of digitalizing the value chain, this is going to be significant, and we can expect spread across the whole value chain. So in short, for more sustainable businesses, in principle, and that's also what we advocate for, this legislation can guarantee even a gain in competitiveness, a level playing field, as Christina mentioned. On digitalization, everybody will have to invest. So this is going to be a cost. And perhaps I pause here for now.
Thank you. Ivo.
And I would like to add one point, and that is, I find it actually quite alarming that 75% of the companies feel unprepared, because I do think that we are facing a fundamental change of our economic system. And while, yes, there will be some companies who say, well, based on what we have done so far, we feel okay, I think the majority of companies will need to review their business model. And this is the very fundamental change that we are facing. So apart from the interoperability, which is lacking, so that there's not a good communication along the supply chain, which is also due to the fact that so far we have externalized the supply chain very much to Asia and beyond. So there's simply a break, a lack in communication, which we now need to overcome. And it's about conveying performance metrics along those supply chains. I'll make a very practical example. Many of the companies, the big brands we work with, who say they do look into these new legislations, try to just calculate the carbon footprint of their products right now. And to do that, they need to make inquiries throughout their supply chains. And they're simply not happy with the results they get back because they feel they cannot trust the results because so many different standards are being used. So you might find yourself in the very same situation that you ask your supplier and they give you a number. Let's say it's even a negative number. And they explain, yeah, look, that's because we have a natural fiber and it will actually store CO2 from the atmosphere. So that's why it's actually beneficial to the environment. What should you say? You can only poke them, question them, like what is the legal, the scientific basis of the statement that you're making, and you need to trust in the answers you get. I would advise you, as a caution, to question these claims, because if we have now realized that we have a very linear model, so our fashion, our fast fashion, will be dumped in landfills very soon or incinerated, that means that no fiber can effectively store carbon from the atmosphere for very long. So all this carbon will return to the atmosphere. At best, it can be neutral. So if you're getting these kinds of claims like we have a carbon negative fiber, I would challenge that and have you challenge that. So this is an example of the interoperability of communicating sustainability information along the supply chains, which we will have to solve very urgently.
Okay, thank you. In this overall situation, I would like to ask CNA, which have been the main difficulties, even if, of course, the process is not new, the company has already started to adapt to the new needs to face the situation. But in this process that has already started, what have been the difficulties?
Well, we are very closely monitoring all the talks on legislation. And one challenge is to extract information that's really needed, because there's a lot of talks going on commission side, and a lot of policymakers make statements. And what's important is, as a company, to extract the content that's important, I would say. The next thing is to translate that information internally, because we need to kind of evaluate what is likely to come. And in order to prepare, because nothing is fixed yet, right? We are a bit in a spot where we really don't know what could come. But we know we need to prepare. So we make educated guesses and align internally with our quality department, for example, with our legal department, with the marketing department when it comes to green claims. So we try to prepare as soon as possible and as best as possible. Another challenge we're facing is that some EU countries do their own legislation, which is, that's great, but what we really try to avoid is that we have a very scattered field of different national legislation, and we very much welcome a harmonization. So that's something we try to feedback to policymakers. Mm-hmm.
So you give me a good hint. It's a topic I wanted to talk about later, but maybe could be also another interesting topic of discussion. What about Europe? What do you think Europe has been doing? Did it do the right investments? Could it do more? What can we expect from Europe, from the legislation, to harmonize and to...
Well, if I just bridge to the point Christina made on harmonization, we believe this is of fundamental importance, because we mentioned these EPR schemes. So again, it's going to be kind of a tax put on the governments to make sure we cover the cost of the afterlife management. Now, imagine a country like France, which already has a scheme like this, says, I give you actually a bonus instead of a tax if you have designed a garment like this. And imagine a neighboring country like Netherlands has a completely different system. And you multiply this by 27 member states of the European Union, it's going to be absolutely chaos. So the brands, the business cannot comply with that. And we really wonder, what are we going to gain out of that? We're going to get pots of money, which is going to be scattered right and left, but we're not going to support the transition towards circular business model in textiles. So I fully concur on that. Harmonization is absolutely key. And ideally, in some specific points, such as the chemical regulations, we should even aim at global rules. Because if in Europe we made certain products in a certain manner, but in a neighboring country you have different chemicals rules, again, we are not doing anything good. We are reducing the competitiveness of certain brands, and we're not making the world better. So harmonization is key. Then you also mentioned infrastructure. We see this very important when it comes to the textile recycling infrastructure. You mentioned 7.5 million tons of textile waste are generated every year, and McKinsey said to manage this quantity, you need to build between 150 and 250 new plants, new facilities. And that's massive. So there is the potential to change textile waste from a waste, from a problem, into a new raw material, which can also benefit for the competitiveness of our industry. But there are investments to be done in a harmonized manner as well. So we have challenges, but we also have opportunities also through this level playing field legislation and harmonization to get this done in the right way.
Ivo, if you want to.
Yeah, should we maybe stay on the issue of textile waste? And I'd like to use the opportunity to talk about the T-Rex project a little bit, which is a European project. It's a collaboration of 12 different actors literally along the textile supply chain. And it involves big technology providers like BASF, but it also involves brands like Adidas. And they all collaborate to come to a more circular business model design for textiles. And the idea is to really collect textile waste, source sorted, so really differentiating the polyesters, the nylons, the cotton, and so on, and to look at recycling opportunities. And it's important to realize how far we have come on recycling. So while before you may all be aware of mechanical recycling, which had its limits, so basically it's a relatively minor share of the collected textiles, about 1/5, which is suitable for mechanical recycling. So that means we need new innovative technologies like the ones provided by BASF, which is called chemical recycling. Chemical recycling means that you actually go back to the building blocks of the fibers and create materials which are as good as new, virgin type fibers. So this is a technological solution which now becomes available, and it all depends on routing sufficient waste streams towards these technologies. So our collection and sorting systems will have to improve massively in order to make chemical recycling economically feasible. And economically feasible, it should also be to create these circular systems for the entire value chain. So the project also looks at how each partner along this chain can actually participate in the increased revenue, job creation, and so on, and to really make sure that their business model is future-proof. So that's the kind of overall idea. And this will also be captured in eco-design guides and so on, which actually will help you design products with a higher recycled content and which are easier to recycle by, for instance, making sure that you can simply detach a zipper which would otherwise be obstructing mechanical recycling, for instance, or sorting technology. So it's going to be very, very practical, and the project has just been started last autumn. It will run for 3 years, so expect to see updates during the project is running, and then especially have a look at while it's concluding in 2025 at the outcome, because you'll literally find a blueprint for a more circular textile chain.
Okay, thank you. We spoke about harmonization, but I would like to focus on a specific kind of harmonization, because if I think that companies often work within a supply chain which is involving companies which are not based in Europe, what is, for example, CNA doing in order to face such a situation? I know that, for example, CNA opened jeans manufacturing facility in Europe, in Germany. Maybe is this the way that probably you're going to bring back your production to Europe, or are you asking your supplier to change their policy and adapt to the European requests?
So we have a quite established supply chain and long-term supplier relationships. And I think something is coming back to the same challenge we have internally. As we don't know the final regulation, it's hard to communicate to suppliers what we need from them and what to expect. However, there's one topic that will definitely help everyone, and that's transparency or traceability. It's way more complex when you actually need to do that. And that's something we already work on with our suppliers to ensure we know from the final garment down to fiber production, basically the different stakeholders, the different units working on the product. And as I said, that's pretty challenging, but that's the first step we are already working on. You talked about the Fit factory. That's our denim factory in Mönchengladbach. I wouldn't call it a reshoring project. It's a pilot. It's a pilot basically focusing also on automation. And it's I would say it's quite interesting. There are a lot of learnings out of that. We have next to it a small unit for washing, and we are producing, I think, two pairs of denim. And for us, this is more of a pilot project to see how does automation work. Is this something fit for the future? So I wouldn't say it's like a strategy to fully go back to Germany. And looking a bit of the past of CNA, I think since 2000 we had a factory in Germany, so it's a little bit also in our heritage that we had a bit of production in Germany.
Yeah, I didn't mean exactly Germany. I meant Europe.
Or Europe. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Germany is just a part. Okay. But the general Europe. So yeah.
Okay. And Ivo, what do you think about the supply chain? How could that change? How could the companies from outside Europe rely on this aspect? Or do you know about companies which are changing their policy or their strategies in these terms?
Well, I believe that there are two motivators. One can be nearshoring to just have better control over the supply chain and to overcome the communication and interoperability issues that we've discussed previously, because big brands will need to put certain practices in place, and that of course is easier if you're dealing with a supply chain which is primarily located in Europe. However, I think there's another big driver, and that is this very fundamental change of how we supply the raw materials for textiles. This will also change. And this is something you face throughout all the consumer goods sectors. Everybody is looking at how to replace certain key ingredients with more sustainable alternatives. A big portion of that will be recycled content. And for that to be available on markets, you will have to work with the chemical industry. It's basically the same raw material production that gives you the primary material, which will also be able to recycle the used textiles and make new fibers, new materials out of that. So this will lead to a step change on the market in terms of the companies you work with, because you will have to develop new partnerships with chemical industry, working with them almost like a waste management company to close the loop, which may also entail that you no longer have a selection of suppliers to work with, at least not such a broad selection, but it becomes very much unique and more one-on-one relationships, because there are not so many providers of these materials currently on the market. So the whole mechanism that we've become used to, that it's essentially price-driven and you have a wide selection of suppliers, this may all change in becoming more exclusive, more R&D-type partnerships where we develop those new technologies like chemical recycling. And it will need to be a very trustful, very close relationship. And that is the second driver, which may lead to some effect very similar to nearshoring, but it's done for a very different motivation, namely having a better supplier-customer relationship.
Thank you. Very interesting.
Can I just make two unplanned comments on what we just discussed?
Of course, please.
First of all, I see that this integration that you mentioned, we already see anecdotes of that. where we see even some big brands even start to discuss with fiber producers, with spinners. So not the traditional linear relationship. I go to B, B go to C, and we see A going to X because I want to make sure I can use central recycled material. So I have to go back to the raw material providers or the spinners. So that's very interesting because it is really changing the way this value chain is operating. So we see the circularity aspect is really popping up even before legislation is asking for changes. That's very exciting. The other points linked to both nearshoring, one of the, maybe relevant for the audience here, one of the critical issues we need to solve to increase the production capacity around Europe is the cost differential, the cost element, because of course European area are more expensive than other, but also the skilled workforce one. And that's also very interesting. We have a desperate need of young, talented workers in our value chain, whether it's weaving, it's knitting, it's spinning, or it's fashion making. There is a big need for a new wave of people working in this industry, also able to deal with cooperation in the value chain or digital technologies. So we also have different profiles need, different type of competence. But you may not necessarily only need a textile engineer, but you also need certain capacity to work in the value chain. And the good thing is that this has been acknowledged, also at the European level. We see larger funds being made available to help training students and make them fit for what we hope the new capacity of the industry will be needing in Europe. So these 2 points, I thought, just coming up from what we are discussing now.
Thank you. I see that the time is running fast, and so we are nearing to the time. But I wanted to ask you a last question, and then ask the audience if they have some special request or clarification to ask or whatever. The last question is a bit summing up my topics. In a way, I would like to ask you, if you know if companies have had specific difficulties in starting reaching the target to be compliant with the new legislation, and also if you have any advice that you would give a company that maybe hasn't started or is just considering to start operating, maybe the bigger companies, bigger groups have already started organizing themselves, maybe a smaller company hasn't, but what would you suggest? For example, let's start from the experience of a company which has already started doing something.
Sure. Giving an advice, I would always make sure that you have the full set of information, and I think it's not necessary to have a lot of new stuff for that, but there are a lot of different initiatives or trade association monitoring a lot of the legislation, can support especially smaller companies, giving a bit of advice, even legal advice. So that could be a potential first step to get into the topic of legislation. And the next step would be to establish internal processes and properly monitor and make conclusions out of that.
Thank you. Ivo.
I would totally agree with what Christina has pointed out, and my advice would be start now. You need to get started, and it's better to start small, but get started now. And it's often a good choice to start with one single product and to have this three-step process that I've described in the very beginning, so traceability, then eco-design, and then communication. So maybe you pick a flagship product that you have, and you just start shedding some light on your supply chain. Just map it out. And if you find difficulties in having a branch supply chain, too many suppliers, don't be afraid of clustering them by region, by type of manufacturing process, for instance. It's totally valid to have a representative process for knitting in Bangladesh, I don't know what. So pick a region, pick a type of operation, use it for clustering your supply chain. But try to run an analysis. You will find a wealth of data in publicly available databases, including those made available by the European Commission. So you can even in Excel run some first calculation of a product footprint, and this will give you some indication what is the improvement potential, and then you can get started on eco-design. And once you have done this very first product, you will have built the necessary competences to then tackle the scaling towards the entire product portfolio, and then finally communicating good science-based claims on that.
Thank you.
From my side, I like very much this three steps approach that you mentioned. A fourth one that maybe I would add to that is bringing it up to the management level of the company. We see a lot of brilliant initiative taking almost on the initiative, starting from the sense of initiative of some staff or some employees in the company. It's important that the CEO, the management of the company, is has understood what's ahead of us, so that it can have the sufficient support from the whole management of the company to become a strategic priority in the near future. Linked to that, the second point is try also to see the opportunity of that. This legislation is coming. Maybe it's 12 months, maybe it's 18 months, but it is coming. We don't expect economic difficulties to stop or invert the agenda, because the climate pressure and environmental pressure is huge. And then we see that basically every year growing. So what is the business opportunity for that? How can I change my business model so that I can take advantage of this changing of the value chain? We already see countries, even in Africa, for instance, analyzing this draft of legislation and see how should they do they change their own national industry to become better suppliers or providers of Europe. And my last point, it's, and then I speak really as an industry association, tell us what you need. Because this is the moment not just to listen, but also to contribute to this discussion. The way the laws are made in Brussels, basically they are obliged to consult everyone, from the city council, from a personal individual, to industry association. So there are opportunities to say, we believe this is what we need, this is what we have to do. Industry association, but also NGO, do this as a job, to collect inputs, harmonize, and speak up to the policymakers. So not only stand by, but also make a suggestion and speak up about your needs, because it sounds like a slogan, but there is a power to influence the new legislation. We should use it.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Okay, so it gave us a broad vision of what's going on, and thank you to the speakers that have given us all these nice inputs, very deep impact inputs. And I would like to know from the audience if there are any questions or if you need clarifications. Okay, thank you.
Hi, first of all, thank you so much for this, and it's great that we're moving in this direction. But I've been thinking,
Could you also please tell us about you briefly, for which company you work?
I am Bella. I work for ISCO, but okay. I have been a buyer and designer for many, many brands
in
Europe.
Thank you.
Yes. So my question is, how is Brussels and the legislation working on stopping like direct imports or taxing those? Like there's big retailers in China, for example, that people can order from quite fast. And they have the size of Zara and H&M together, for example. How can we stop, or how will they be charged, or you know, how will this be regulated in terms of laws? And also, how is it, because I'm thinking if I would have a Swedish company, I could easily open a Chinese or company and also start producing there to get around it if you don't want to contribute to an existing planet. But how is Brussels working on this?
Maybe I can pick up this. Thank you for this very important question. There is a clear understanding that we cannot have any loophole in legislation. Any company which will sell a product in the EU, even if you are on online brands located in another part of the planet, will have to comply with legislations. So the principle is already understood, and it's really now spelled out in legislation like it wasn't spelled out before. There will be all procedures to make sure everybody complies. The important point that we also very much advocate for is that we need market surveillance. That means it's even also the countries, the different countries of the EU that needs to make the checks, because the checks are not made in Brussels. Brussels makes the law. And the principle everybody has to comply with the law, it's understood, including any kind of online brands. But then the responsibility to make sure that it is implemented lies with the member state. And that's where we have another problem. Because right now, I think 0.0 something, or everything we import is checked. And that has to change, because otherwise it's like you make the high speed limits in the highway from 200 to 80 kilometers, but you never check that this is enforced. So we very strongly stand against free riding behavior, and that implies work in Brussels, but also in the different countries.
Thank you. Okay. If there is another question, yes, please. Okay.
Hello. My name is Umar, and I am from Pakistan. I want to ask that now we are working on the how can we can reduce the carbon footprint. So we add the chemicals which are ZDSC pass, and just like the we add solar and the utility, how can we reduce? But everything is a cost. We add the recycle percentage, but I don't think brand is ready to give the extra cost for this one.
That's a tricky question, and thanks for asking that. Usually what we would advise is to work with a big brand which is willing to invest in your operations. It's a mechanism called insetting, where basically big brands have the responsibility, they own their footprint, their corporate carbon footprint, and would direct investments into your operations to make sure that you have the means to lower it by energy efficiency measures, by saving on water consumption and so on and so on. So it's basically directing the financial support to where it's really needed in order to enable the big brands to claim the benefits of your local action. So that would be my advice.
Thank you. And I think it should be from the CNA.
Indeed.
Assume you know what I mean. So in the end, usually it's always the case that brands take part of the costs, right? Because we require you to use better and more expensive chemicals. So we pay in the end on the final product for it. So does that answer your comment, basically?
Yes. We can say a little bit, but there is a different certification already they have, which would be the answer. Can you understand? Yeah, we have a different certification for all the thing for the chemical suppliers and the recyclability and the traceability. But my question is the same. The brands are not ready. Maybe you are saying that you are adding the FOB, because if we add the recycled material in the yarn and other thing, then we listen that we should need in this price and in this price, they will not add the. So I think we should think about that if supplier is doing something in the sustainability, then it must be a higher price. Thank you.
Okay.
I will take that back to our sourcing department.
Okay, other questions, please, because
hi, I'm Ilse. I'm working in the textile business and primarily denim for more over than 25 years. We are at the denim fair, and I just wanted to ask a question to all of you and the panel. And I think, Mauro, you started in the beginning as well. Of course, longevity and durability is one of the key aspects. Denim is known as a pant with a high durability and a longevity. At the same time, since its history, it's made to fade. We wash it down, we bleach it, we do tons of things with it. And after the consumer buys it, it's a product that normally is worn in and lives in to a way that the consumer wears it. Is one of the key issues that we basically have in terms of claiming longevity of durability is the fading aspect, which is very particular to denim. So since we are at a denim fair, it's a topic I wanted to raise and bring to your attention, and maybe we can have a separate chat and discuss a bit longer about this, but it's a typical denim industry issue, I would say, or concern.
If I can react quickly, sure, we can also follow up, but thanks, that's an interesting point. Linked to that, when we are advocating, we are telling the European Commission what we believe should be the requirements, we also believe you should not fix horizontal requirements for all kinds of trousers or shirts. You should take into account the material, the intended function, and possibly even the type of technology, knitting and weaving. Because we as textile expert, we meaning also our members, we know what is durability in a denim, for instance, and what it is on a silk shirt. They're completely different. So we are advocating for different sub-criteria based on the specificities of the material. And also very important for us, relying on existing industry standards. Because the industry already today measures the quality in different products. So we believe we should use that. And also I can add that when it comes to denim, we also see a very big potential for recycling. Because you mentioned chemical recycling before, but cellulose-based fabrics like denim, they have very good potential both in mechanical and chemical recycling. So there are different maybe aspects that can be valorized on the good production of those fabrics. But happy to learn more, of course, as we are in the denim fair. Also for us, for me, it's very interesting to talk to all the companies here.
Ivo, if you want to, she asked all of us, all of you, sorry, all of you a comment if you want to add something or if you want to add Christina something.
Maybe I can leverage that example because I think you make an excellent point in that how complex this whole discussion is because there are so many options that you can take. And we at Qantas, we advocate for a very data-driven, a science-based approach. So with all of the options that you've outlined, you can see how in a product carbon footprint exercise, you should compare based on this one performance metric, what is the ultimate carbon footprint of your product, taking into account all these material options, the processing options, the end-of-life options, and so on. It will give you different results. The carbon footprint is ultimately a bit like a price. It reflects the total effort from a nature and ecological point of view that went into making your product and having a full life cycle of your product. And the answers can be very different. So what we are against is stereotyping or just greenwashing based on, oh, it's a natural fiber, so it must be sustainable. I think we can see with this complexity, this cannot be true. We need to have case-by-case investigations. So thanks for that great example.
I can basically just echo what you said, and it shows the contradiction we have when we talk about sustainability. On one side, we should increase the recycled textile-to-textile content. But I think you know better than me that this can compromise a lot the durability and the quality of a product. And when we add certain washes upon that denim, it can be really problematic. I don't have an answer to you here, but that's something we really need to consider. And also, we need to educate policymakers on that part. Thanks.
Okay. I don't know if we can add on one last question. We're already out of time, but maybe one last question if there is from the audience, and if not.
Hi, I'm a student from a fashion school. So as a consumer, I would like to ask, I mean, all of those legislations and all of those laws you mentioned, they sounded very good, but how will you be making sure that the companies will really comply those laws and are not like faking to complying them?
I think we touched upon that. We need checks and we need a better market surveillance system because we don't have it today. To give an idea, in 2018 we circulated in the EU and UK 28 billions of garments. Currently there is no way you can control not even 1%. We estimate that there are maybe 10-15% of that which might not even be compliant with basic chemical regulations. So we, our member companies, are the first which are asking we need enforcement, better enforcement. That does not necessarily mean more inspector on the streets. It means better IT technologies to profile the bad guys, so to say. So this is absolutely important. I think also that's where NGO and industry join forces because we all have the interest that everybody plays according to the rules. We also heard this other colleagues saying that. And normally this is not very often discussed in policy making, but now we are changing that because we really make understand the point is not to make a law for the sake of making a law or hitting always the same brands or companies, but it's to make sure everybody complies with that. So for us, this is absolutely a priority.
Okay, Thank you. Thanks, everybody. It was super interesting, and we went into deep in many aspects. Of course, there is so much more to say about it, but maybe for next talk. And thank you. Thank you to our speakers. Thanks again. Thanks to the audience. Thanks to everybody, and have a nice show. Thanks to also to Première Vision. Thank you.